Good morning. Lovely to see all of you. I hope your weekends so far have been pretty good. Maybe there's been some bright spots in them. I know for me, a bright spot is being with all of you right now. So thanks for being here. Welcome to Reservoir Church. I'm Ivy. I'm a pastor on staff. I hope that among many things that you get to discover the love of God this morning, the gift of community, and the joy of living in ways that actually ripple out far beyond these walls and your experience this morning into your day, the fullness of your week. I hope that can be true for you and that you really feel that through a welcome without exception here this morning. I am going to help us walk through this program that you hope you hopefully got on your way in, draw out some announcements for you, and get you acquainted with this small welcome card that is in your program. Hopefully you have one. Pull it out. If you are feeling new here or this is your first time at Reservoir, this is a way for you to let us know that. Put your information down here. It's a way for us to communicate back to you a little bit about who Reservoir is and ways to get more information or plugged in if you're interested in that. There's ways specifically on the backside if you're sort of wondering, well, I don't know what kind of information I want. There's some jump starts for you there on the backside. You'll see the fields, for example, becoming a member. You could check that off. You're wondering, like, what does membership look like? How does Reservoir think about that? And somebody will get back to you in the week. So same is true for the other fields there. And then there's also an opportunity to check off, I'd love to meet with a pastor and have coffee and have this like one-on-one in-face conversation. So you can check that off. We love to do that. Don't hesitate to do that. And then also you'll see this field for question of the day. This is something we like to do on Sunday morning so that we can all touch this card. Also, it's a way to sort of prime our minds and our hearts for more words to come in the sermon that Steve will share with us this morning. So the question this morning is, how is it and where is it that you are feeling most connected these days? Where is it, how is it that you're feeling most connected these days? I'll give you a second to fill that out, respond on this little card here. Thanks for taking a minute to do that. You can put this welcome card in baskets that will come around later in the service. It's also an opportunity, if you consider Reservoir your home church, to put offering financial donation in. If that's your mode of doing that, you can do that at that moment. But otherwise, we just love your welcome card. And let me draw your attention to a couple of highlighted announcements. You can see the full listing here in our program on the back flap, in the middle flap, actually. There's a bunch going on in and around Reservoir, but let me highlight a couple, which actually the two are on this bigger insert in your program, Cooking Nights and this Bangladeshi Art and Dance Nights, both picking up in November on different nights of the week, but for, I think both of them for, well, one's for 3 weeks and one's for 4 weeks. In November over at our Fresh Pond Apartments, our neighbors just down the block. So if you want to be involved in that, you want to hear more about it, everyone's welcome. Email Lydia. Her contact information is on here, I'm sure. She would love to hear from you. And then lastly, there's a Developing Spiritual Mentors class that is coming up the second Sunday in November. It'll happen every month on the second Sunday for 8 months. And so if you've been just curious about how is it that I can listen well to people in my life, listen to them, but also listen to God on behalf for them, and you'd love some sort of tools and some ways to do some spiritual practices, contemplative practices. We'll be working through some material for those 8 months. Love to have you there. And if you could RSVP, there's a link there as well. Or if you have any questions, you can just reach out directly to me. I'd be happy to answer them. And lastly, Before I hand it over to Steve this morning, I want to take a couple minutes to do what we call a community moment, which is really just an opportunity to hear from many of you in our community. We do them a bunch of different ways. Sometimes they run along a sermon series that we're doing, and we've heard some stories that sort of call out that that theme in the sermon series. Some others are just ways to hear more about who you are, what you're passionate about. And last week and this week, we've been kind of teasing out more of the liveliness around this churchwide retreat that we had in early September. And the focus of that retreat was really around mending and sort of the richness and the tactileness of this metaphor, but also the spiritual hard work that is in mending in our real lives. So I would love to invite you to hear a lovely story from my friend and member, Dr. Lisa Poloi. So welcome her up. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself for those of us who might not know?
Sure. Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm Lisa. I'm a member here at Reservoir. I have been teaching and now administration at MassArt for the last 18 years or so. I said this in the previous service, but my hobby is going to retreats with pastors here at the Reservoir. So Ivy and I went in August. Steve and I just got back. Lydia, I think we're going to go on a retreat soon together. So that is who I am.
We're going to hear more about what you do at MassArt, but I'd love to just touch this moment at the retreat that I know for you was really meaningful and powerful and has helped you in some of your work in your role at MassArt. So could you tell us about that moment?
So for those of you that were at the retreat and those of you that weren't, there was a room, a station that was where there was the icon of Our Lady of Untire of Knots. And apparently Pope Francis actually is quite close to Pope Francis. It's a Catholic icon. But the invitation in this room was to leave things there in kind of the metaphor of a thread, and you would tie knots and untie knots, or if you couldn't untie it and were tired of doing that, you could leave it at Our Lady of Untire of Knots. It was this beautiful icon made by a Greek artist that anyway, it was just a beautiful thing to reflect on. And so I spent a lot of time in this room.
And Lisa didn't mention her particular role at MassArt, but she is the new dean of Justice, Equity, and Transformation, which makes me think perhaps there's some knots that you might be looking at and trying to untangle. Could you tell us a little bit about like how your experience has been in that?
Yes, so there's a big knot in the title of my position. So, and I think that one of the things that I've experienced in being in this role is that, and maybe some of you are experiencing or hearing being in the teaching profession or healthcare or really every area, I think, in our society right now is re-envisioning this idea of what diversity, equity, inclusion looks like. Like the ways that we've been doing it haven't worked. And the way that we're framing it at MassArt right now, it's not just about compliance, actually. It's more about culture. This thing that we need to shift and think about in a different way in order to move forward these ideas better than we are now. So,
yeah, I mean, can you give us a little bit of a sense of what that work has looked like for you? Maybe where you envision mending coming in, or I don't know, a little bit of the texture of like what it actually feels to be in that space.
So when I signed on for this position, I was really clear that this was not just going to be my job. I am not the only one, or this is not the only office that's going to be invested in this work. And so, you know, what that looks like is that It's not just this, we call the JET office, responsible for everything related to diversity or equity. It's how we're seeding this as a through line throughout the whole institution, from faculty and staff and students, creating opportunities and capacity to build these conversations in a way that we haven't before. And when I kind of first came on to work in administration, very simply, that might look like saying hi to someone in the hall that you've never said hi to before. I mean, very simply, you know, how do we create a welcoming environment? The other thing I think in this work, and in the, I guess I like that idea, the texture of it, is that if we come back to this lady of Untire of Knots, some of my knots in there were thinking about, we are in a racialized environment at MassArt, actually in our society. And often, and some of the things that I'm navigating and trying to bring people around to, is that some people realize and acknowledge that that is a huge knot that we need to figure out how to look at differently and come to differently. And some might not even think it's a knot at all. So it's quite a challenge to hold those two perspectives and experiences. I love this, I'm an artist, so texture really kind of captures that there are so many, in some ways, complexities to this conversation, and then some ways it's not. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Big, deep work, challenging work, courageous work. How do you sort of care for yourself in this role and in your existence in life?
Yes, so people that know me know I take a lot of hot baths. This is how I immediately relax. Like, we come back to our essence of, you know, kind of, and I was never a bath person. I just want to be clear about that. Like, for many, many years, I was like, I don't want to get in that water, like, and just sit there. What am I doing, you know? So, I have come around to really evangelize about taking baths because it's changed my life. I mean, I really feel like in moments when it was very difficult, when you hit that hot water, it's just your body knows what to do. And then the other weird thing that I do in there is actually, and this is kind of a cleansing, kind of releasing thing, is, and it gets a little cold at the end, but it's very quite meditative, is I wait for the whole water to drain out of the tub. And then you're actually, that all that stuff that you brought in has now gone down the drain, at least for that moment. And that feels really good too. And people are like, why, you just sit there, don't you get a little cold? And like, then I, you know, rinse off again and I, you know. But that's, yes. The other thing that I would like to share is Steve and I were on a retreat last week, and there was this really beautiful writing that I'd like to read, and it's called How Good to Center Down. I'm just going to come here. So this is by Howard Thurman. How good is it to center down? To sit quietly and see oneself pass by. The streets of our minds seethe with endless traffic. Our spirits resound with clashing, with noisy silences, while something deeper within hungers and thirsts for the still moment and the resting lull. With full intensity, we seek, ere thicket passes, a fresh sense of order in our living. A direction, a strong, sure purpose that will structure our confusion and bring meaning in our chaos. We look at ourselves in this waiting moment, the kinds of people we are. The questions persist. What are we doing with our lives? What are the motives that order our days? What is the end of our doings? Where are we trying to go? Where do we put the emphasis, and where are our values focused? For what end do we make sacrifices? Where is my treasure? And what do I love most in life? What do I hate most in life? And to what am I true? Over and over, the questions beat upon the waiting moment. As we listen, floating up through all of the jangling echoes of our turbulence, there is a sound of another kind, a deeper note which only the stillness of the heart makes clear. It moves directly to the core of our being. Our questions are answered, our spirits refreshed, and we move back into the traffic of our daily round with the peace of the eternal in our step. How good it is to center down. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Lisa.
My heart is so full. I love that, Lisa, you just gave us like an update on your work, which is so interesting, and a poem by this local legend hero, Howard Thurman, and also like how to take a bath. So it's very practical. Thank you. I have to say, too, my heart is so full, too. I've been a member of this church about 14 years. We have been serving free bagels like just about every single Sunday, those entire 14 years. That's, I don't know, 700 Sundays or something. And today I did this thing I'd never done, but I've seen little kids do like over the years here, and I just sort of stumbled myself into it, where you toast a bagel, in my case a chocolate chip bagel, you warm it up, and then you slather cream cheese on one side, and then jelly on the other, and you put them together, and oh, if there's a heaven, right, like there it is. So I've never done that, I don't think. Like I just eat plain bagels, and I thought, I'm never going back. Like that was, so just for what it's worth, how to eat a bagel as well. I'm just, whew, so happy. All right. Let me give thanks for all of us, at least for me, okay? Thank you, God, for this day. I kind of kid, kind of not. Like, there's just so many gifts all around us to be had. And that bagel was for sure one of them. I'm not joking. Like, I'm cherishing, God, that taste and mouthfeel. That was so good. Thank you. And thanks for Lisa's generous sharing, too. Just sharing part of her journey she's on. I guess, God, my real hope and prayer is that during this time that you'd encourage us each in our own journeys, that we all have different lives, we're all in different spaces, some of which we could define and describe, some of which you wouldn't be able to, about where we are in life and where we are in terms of knowing and walking with and feeling accompanied by a God who loves us. And my dear hope for this day and for this coming few weeks and our Sundays is that you'd encourage us to move forward on our journeys with hope, with faith, with love, with power, that you keep us moving and to really good places and spaces, God. We pray for your encouragement to hit us all as we need it today. Amen. I want to talk about the myth of perfection for a moment. When we are trying to accept imperfections, one of the phrases I've often heard, I've often said, I think I've often said to other people, is progress, not perfection. And at first, that sounds really good. Like, if I'm on, say, a weight loss hope, like, I don't need to lose 20 pounds this week. I can lose 1 pound, and then some other day, another pound. I'll be making progress. That's great. Or if I'm trying to encourage my kids to do better in school, like, I don't need to tell them, get straight A's tomorrow. I can say, like, do one thing better tomorrow, and another the next day, another the next day. And it sounds really good until you stop and think about it and realize, actually, that notion of progress is kind of a big trap as well. It assumes, for one, there is such a thing as perfection, the ideal me, the ideal child, the ideal you, the ideal whatever. And it assumes that we can all feel really good as long as we're making progress toward that ideal. But I've had reason to start asking myself, like, who gets to decide, where does that ideal come from? Who gets to decide what it is? This conference that Lisa mentioned that I was at the other week, that we were both at, was on justice and renewal. It was led by this scholar, activist, many other things, named Christina Cleveland. One of her great lines, my favorite line from the conference, was this one about perfection. She said, "Perfection is a figment of the colonial imagination." Perfection is a figment of the colonial imagination. She meant a lot of things by that, but one of them being that our ideas of perfection get shaped. They don't just come up from the ground. They're shaped by other people and forces, usually by powerful people and groups. These ideas of perfection are used to rank people and cultures, elevating some and diminishing others. Perfection has very few winners and many, many losers. And if we settle for progress instead of perfection, we actually haven't changed the goal at all. We've just tried to make peace with our slow speed in never getting there. That doesn't sound so good. If we took a quick look at the trees around us, we would notice the same lesson being taught to us. I've been spending a lot of time this fall taking short, slow walks and looking at the trees around me. I hope you've had the chance to do that too. They're still there if you haven't, even on a rainy day. You'll notice if you do this, there's no such thing as the perfect tree. So there's no such thing as a tree making like progress toward perfection. Healthy trees just grow. And they don't grow like linearly, right? If you look at rings, like they'll grow a lot some years, not at all others. They get pruned back and seem to be shrinking. And yet healthy things kind of in their own way do continue to grow. And their growth and their expansion signals they're flourishing. No matter how beautiful kind of a form that growth takes. At Reservoir, when we think about life, and when we think about the life of faith, we have this kind of flourishing in mind. Our aim, our actual vision statement, is that people will connect with Jesus and connect with our church and will thrive or flourish more as a result. We don't think we need to manage exactly what form that flourishing takes. We don't think we need to manage exactly where our faith journeys each should lead. But we do want to encourage us all to take one. We do want to encourage us all to stay on journey, to choose movement over stagnation, to see what love and peace and joy this life and the one who made it all have in store for us as we keep moving. And for the next few weeks, starting today on Sundays, we will rather explicitly be inviting you to think about your faith journey. We feel like we do that implicitly throughout the year, but we'll be really specific about it this month. Pastors Ivy, Lydia, myself will talk about 5 ways of being in the world that might encourage more positive movement in our lives. They are not the only 5, obviously. They're 5 that we like, and they're 5 that we have chosen for years as the values of this community for doing Jesus-centered community life in our time and place. They are connection, action, everyone, freedom, and humility. If you like this approach, if you'd like increasing company and encouragement on your faith journey, we will strongly encourage you, if you're not, just to be honest about this, to become a member at Reservoir. Membership in our church is about belonging, not about believing. It's a way of saying to this community, I belong here. I will let these folks try to encourage my faith journey, and I will, as I'm able, be an encouragement to others on their faith journey. Membership and the community and the giving that it involves is also a way of sustaining a community, to say, I will make this thing live and thrive. Sustaining, in our case, a fully inclusive, Jesus-centered community of faith, one that values and empowers connection, action, everyone, freedom, and humility. Like most things in life that are good, this is a good thing, but it is not free. We only stay on our journey together with your membership, your contributions, your giving. And so we'll talk about that here and there over the next few weeks as well. I really look forward to connecting this month around our faith journeys, to listening and learning from one another as we go, to actually try to put aside notions of perfection or even of progress, and to discover like what beautiful things we will see and become as we simply thoughtfully move forward together. I want to read a passage I've been drawn to today for this first talk. It's from the 4th account of the life of Jesus, the one that's called the Good News according to John. And it's an important story in John's account. The whole book of John is building toward a climax with this surprising scene. It's in the 13th chapter, and I'll read you a bunch of that story. It goes like this. Jesus and his disciples were sharing the evening meal. Ordinary enough begin to the story. The next line says, oh, it gets kind of weird. The devil had already provoked Judas, Simon Iscariot's son, to betray Jesus. So there's that happening. Jesus knew the Father had given everything into his hands and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the table, took off his robes. Picking up a linen towel, he tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a wash basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel he was wearing. When Jesus came to Simon Peter, Peter said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you don't understand what I'm doing now, but you will understand later. No, Peter said, you will never wash my feet. Jesus replied, "Unless I wash you, you won't have a place with me." Simon Peter said, "Lord, not only my feet, but also my hands, my head." Jesus responded, "Those who have bathed need only to have their feet washed, because they are completely clean. You disciples are clean, but not every one of you." He knew who would betray him. That's why he said, "Not every one of you is clean." After he washed his disciples' feet, he put on his robes and returned to his place at the table. He said to them, "Do you know what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you speak correctly because I am. If I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you too must wash each other's feet. I have given you an example. Just as I have done, you also must do. I assure you, servants aren't greater than their master, nor are those who are sent greater than the one who sent them. Since you know these things, you will be happy if you do them." So at first, this seems like a perfect passage to talk about one of our other values, the one we'll close the series with, humility. We can think that faith or religion are connected to being on the winning team, being right all the time, maybe even having power over others, maybe even about becoming perfect, and so finally pleasing to a distant God of perfection. But here is Jesus not doing any of those things, kneeling on the ground, mud and crap on his hands, doing the work of a servant, grounded and honest and humble. We'll come back to that theme in its own way. But we're going to start with another value that helps us in our faith journey, I think one that we can also see in this story, and that is our need and longing for increasing connection in our lives. Jesus is moving person by person at this table, touching them, soaking a towel in water, rubbing that water across each person's feet, scraping dirt, washing off sweat, looking up at each person, talking with them, kind of face to foot, and then, you know, looking eye to eye as he speaks with each person. It is a moment of humble service, to be sure, but it is also one of profound connection. If you've washed someone's feet, or if you've had that done for you, I suppose all of us had, at least when we were babies, if nothing else, like that is a very intimate exchange that's going on. And this is very complicated for Peter, it seems, who tells Jesus not to do this with him. This might be because Jesus doesn't like Jesus doing what looks like servant's work to him. He feels this out of place. It might also be, though, that Peter just finds this level of intimacy, this form of connection, difficult. Men of a certain age seem to come into this difficulty with kind of shared intimacy with other men. I wonder if that's part of what's going on for Peter here, too. It's awkward for him, maybe, for Jesus to get that physically and emotionally close to him. Kind of doesn't know what to do with that openness. Jesus is offering like this whole self, outer clothes removed, his soul kind of open as well, like so close to him. And then when Jesus says to Peter, "This is necessary. If I don't wash you, we don't know each other." And Peter says, he's like, "Pour on the water, right? Wash my whole head, my whole body." It's a weird moment. It's kind of extra on Peter's part. It also seems that Peter might be misunderstanding this moment, thinking that Jesus is offering him what in Jewish culture is called a mikvah. A mikvah is a ritual washing. It's a way of physically and symbolically cleansing you. And so then, still now in some Jewish communities, you'd be immersed in the waters of a mikvah if you'd been ceremonially impure or unclean in some way. It's sort of like a religious version of Lisa's bath, really, this mikvah. And it can be used in some Jewish communities as part of a threshold moment of entering into faith and into the faith community. It was a precursor, probably, to the Christian ritual of baptism, one we'll talk about in a couple weeks when we talk about everyone. But Jesus is like, "No, you're good, Peter. This is not a baptism. This is not a mikvah. This is not this moment about making you clean or acceptable or washed or even perfect, I suppose, Peter. This is about seeing something you'll need to know, that leadership and service are really bound into one thing if they're to be true, and this is also a moment of connection." I find that when one person is deeply connected, when they're deeply connected to themselves and their story, maybe deeply connected to their roots, as Jesus was here, their history, their God, where they came from, even when they're deeply connected to their surroundings, like their place, their community, the earth itself, that when people are like that, their authenticity, their groundedness is really compelling. And the connection they shape out of that seems to draw something back out of us. When I was in that conference that I've mentioned with Christina Cleveland the other week, one morning she had us sit in a circle and said she wanted to tell us part of her story. She talked without notes for a long time, very personally, about a journey she'd taken in her life from living in her head to also like living in her heart and in her body as a whole integrated person. She told us about how, in her case, like Ivy League educated, PhD, super smart, her, Christina, was becoming more whole, more grounded, like deeper in herself and in her work. It was just a really honest story told by a good storyteller, unguarded. That's all. It wasn't really my story in any way, but when we had some time afterwards, I found a place where I could just lay back on the ground. I was surprised by this like deep well of tears that came to me. I was so moved. I started thinking of my own life journey of not just living in my head, of being more in touch with my emotions, like more integrated between my thinking, my feeling, my instincts, moving in my own way toward more and more wholeness in life. My story was coming to mind in kind of a free way. There was something about hearing the movement in her story that gave me permission to think honestly about the, in some ways similar, but in some ways very different journey that I'm on, where I am and where I'm going. I think our connection with other people, when it goes well, kind of true and deep, so often does this kind of thing. Connection with other people is so bound up with our sense of connection to our own self and even our connection to the Spirit of God. Deep human connection with another person, like often takes us inward, honestly, into ourselves, takes us upward, too, toward God more deeply. It seems that just as we were made for growth and movement, not progress and perfection, we're also really made for connection. I think this may be part of why Jesus commended this kind of service he was doing to all his followers. I do think he was telling us to like mop floors for people more than boss them around, to practice what's been famously called servant leadership. But maybe he was also modeling and commending servant intimacy, offering connection to others from a place of humility, from an undefended, honest, reflective openness to others in the world. I've been thinking about that, servant intimacy. I'm thinking what an amazing thing it is that we can do so much good by just being authentic to ourselves, by being increasingly grounded, and then sharing that openness with others who we choose to trust. One of the most powerful ways we can press into this connection and we can receive it from others as well is through careful, loving disclosure, how we receive others' disclosure to us. This process of careful, loving disclosure is how I got my second best friend in the world I want to tell you about. I've known my friend John for more than 26 years. We met at a student conference. We worked on a little project together afterwards, and then we hung out a few times. And at one point, John said, "Hey, can we meet up and take a walk together? I want to tell you my story." I forget if there was an occasion for it. It may have been John's birthday, or it may have been just out of the blue, but no one had ever said something like that to me. Like, "I want to tell you my story. Can we do that?" But it sounded interesting, so I was like, "Sure, tell me your story." We took a walk somewhere, and John says something like, "It begins in a Japanese warehouse in 1945. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is going to be a long story." And it was kind of a long story, but not as long as I feared. The Japanese warehouse was kind of a quick pit stop on something in his father's journey, and then the story sped up a couple of three decades and went on from there. But he went on to tell me the things that at the time he thought had been most important in making him the human that he was that day. It included some profoundly personal things that I'd obviously not share with you, the kind of things that most of us, you know, wouldn't blast out in public, even if they're about our own lives, not our friends. But it was a really unguarded moment. Like Jesus with that basin and the towel, John was offering me something. He was offering me the gift of removing the outer layers of himself, the most important parts of his life, offering me the gift of knowing some important stories about him and connecting. All he asked in offering that gift was that I would listen, that I would care, that I would receive his disclosure with the connection in which it was offered. I did, and in the short run, that meant I told him part of my story, because that's what you do when someone discloses part of who they are to you, and you welcome that, right? If you don't, you say thank you for sharing, more or less, and you kind of don't do more of that. You know, you certainly don't reciprocate. But if you welcome that connection, and if that feels positive, safe, trusting, a connection that you would like to have, then you in turn offer part of yourself back. That's how that works. And I did that, and that was fun. And then in the long run, this led to an uncommonly great friendship. We were on the phone this past week, making plans for how we're going to celebrate one of our birthdays together coming up. There are, I should mention, significant things John and I don't agree upon, like some really important things. If we had been on some kind of friend version of online dating, which I was told by someone younger than myself actually does exist, right? So, but if it didn't then, and if we had been on that, we definitely would not have been matched, I don't think. Like, we're just too different in too many ways. I don't think, like, an algorithm would have ever chosen us for one another. But we have this friendship of profound trust, of really deep connection. And it's one of the things in life that, to be honest, I treasure most. And it started with this choice around disclosure. 14 years ago, my wife Grace and I had a preschooler and a baby, and we were looking for a church to go to. We were looking for a place that practiced like vibrant faith. We're looking for a Jesus-centered space, but we're also looking for a place that, with all its vibrancy and all its Jesus, wouldn't like tell us exactly what we had to believe all the time. We're also looking for a place, kind of criteria number two, a place where we felt we could make friends, where we could be real and where other people would be kind of real with us, where people would be open about their lives and welcome our openness. Those two things meant that we found this place. We found this place. We never visited another church during that season. We just kept coming. We became members. We started giving within a couple of months of first visiting. We started attending this community group that really didn't work out that well for us because it took far too long for us to drive to. Often about halfway in that drive on a weekday evening, our preschooler and baby like making noise in the back, we'd be like, why are we doing this? And we'd think about turning around. Sometimes we would actually turn around and go home. But most of the time we would just keep going because we were making friends. We were making some connections. And then a year later, after talking for a while to a pastor, and as we were expecting our third child, we thought this would be much easier if we could just do this in our own home. And we got the blessing to start our own community group in our house, which a few people that are still here today were part of together for years. Since then, our church has changed in a number of ways, right? We have been on our own journey too, like moving, growing, learning, changing, which is good. But some things haven't changed at all, and I certainly think neither of these things have. I'm in my Saturday morning community group, a different one now, 14 years later, but one I host on Saturdays here. We did an exercise last weekend that a number of our groups are doing these days in the church, where we talk about what we appreciate about this community and what that teaches us about what God's doing in this church. And it turns out that these things came up. We all had ways we felt like we connect with God here, like with a living experience of God that feels real to us but isn't like tightly managed by someone else, certainly not by a pastor. We also were really struck, a lot of us, by people's unguarded openness in this community, by people we encounter who are real with their stories so that we can connect with them and so that we can be real back if we so choose to be. This willingness to open our life to someone else in disclosure and this willingness to receive someone else's openness as a gift, I think that makes for a really good church community, but also makes for a really good life. Open, unguarded human connection seems to be some of what we most need to be happy, to put it in Jesus' words, some of what we most need to feel at home. It even seems to be one of the best ways we start to feel more connected with ourselves, more at home in our own lives, and even more connected with God. Connection of any kind seems to open up the possibility for more connection. I want to mention before I wrap up, though, like another means of getting there besides this kind of disclosure I'm talking about. One other way we can start to feel more at home in our lives, more connected to the God that made us and walks with us in our lives. A quite simple way, actually. My way in is with Jesus and the water. How Jesus didn't talk about service and connection. He served and he connected, and he didn't just do it with words. He used the power of touch and he poured water. Even while indoors, he looked at his disciples with whom he walked miles together on most days, and he took water from outside and he poured it over their feet. For us who don't walk miles on most days, most of us, and have so much less contact with trees and ground and water than people like Jesus and his friends did. Another way we can start to connect with ourselves more and be more at home with ourselves and learn to be more at home with God is to slow down, touch the natural world more. At my conference the other week, I met a man named Jonathan Stalls. He's kind of like a hippie from another time, and his purpose in life is to get people walking more and to get people connected to each other and the natural world more as they walk. Like, that's what he does in life. And even though I just met him, I've already been on walks with Jonathan where you pick up fallen objects in nature and you just look at them and see what they have to say to you. I've been on walks with Jonathan where you walk side by side with someone else, friend or stranger, and you practice saying more and listening better. I've been on walks with Jonathan where you go slowly and pay attention to what's around you, and you just see and notice, linger, look, listen, smell, take your shoes off and touch the ground. And the goal of all this time outside, all this walking, is really to get us connected more with our natural environment and to slow down and see what we notice when we're less distracted and more still. I've shared before about a Japanese theologian whose work I appreciate. His name is Kosuke Kayama, was Kosuke Kayama, and his powerful reflections that he has on the speed of God. Kosuke Kayama says, God is a 3-mile-per-hour God. He says, that's the speed of God. God moves at the pace of walking, he wrote, because God has walked with us, because God has become one of us, and because the pace of what God does moves and grows slowly, for the most part, by design. For centuries, followers of Jesus have not worshiped God as the 3-mile-per-hour God. That's a new and beautiful title that this theologian has given to God. But they have known that God is with us, and they've known that we find God and connect God with God more when we find time to be still, to be silent, and to be in solitude. Even in much slower times than ours, which have been pretty much all times, times with no internet, no cars, no electricity. Even then, solitude, stillness, and silence have been classic and important disciplines of the Christian faith. In our times, when we are almost always inside, when we're almost never undistracted and still, where everything is telling us to go faster, one of the most radical ways that we can start to be at home again is to slow down. To walk more if we're able, to carve out time, walking or not, to be alone, to be silent, and to be still. These days, I'm experimenting a little with the first like 10 to 15 minutes of my day. I'm not really ready to pray when I first wake up. If I jump right into my first cup of coffee or my delicious bagel, it's easy for me to do those things like while I'm firing up my phone or my laptop and get on my email or social media feed and kind of jump into the urgency of the day. But to be outside for a little bit, walking very slowly, not for exercise, just to look at the sky, to move my feet, to feel the air on my skin, to see a tree dropping leaves, and to notice what's on my mind, it slows down the urgency of the day. It helps me feel at home where I live, like literally like the neighborhood I sleep in, to be more at home there. It might sound weird to some of you who haven't experienced this, but I can't think of a better way of saying this. It helps me feel at home in my own life, my own bones more. Jesus knew, I think, that more than solving our problems, more than any new idea or new technology, we really need connection. We need to know and be known. We want to feel at home in our lives. We want to feel at home on our earth. So my invitation to you today, really my commission to you, is to welcome connection in any form you can find it. To welcome the connection to yourself and the earth by taking 15 minutes a day or whatever, taking an hour or two a week to be outdoors, alone, silent, just walking slowly, to think, to pray, just to let your mind go empty maybe. It's one of the easiest ways we can start. Good news about our area, Greater Boston, is that no matter how urban or developed your neighborhood is, I know the city well, there are bits of grass or trees or water like near where all of us live. It's a good city for it too. I'd also invite you to welcome and offer a real connection with some people in your lives. Maybe you start slowly, like you look a few more people in the eye in settings and places where that feels uncommon but worth doing. Maybe over your retail or work or customer service encounters, you try to make a small human connection and see what it feels like to have those pile up in your day. Maybe, right, to a friend or to someone you trust, you do what my friend John did 26 years ago, and you say, I'd like to tell you my story, and you disclose a deeper, more personal part of yourself than you've yet done. I'm guessing, given the nature of our city and some of you that I've met, that there are probably many of us in our lives that have done that in the past with other people that aren't so present to us anymore, or even in other cities, but haven't had a lot of that depth of connection in this city yet. I think, wow, well, maybe give that a try. But however you try, like, see how more of this connection feels. See where it leads. Notice just how much more at home you might come to be in yourself, on your earth, in your communities, even with your God as you do this. These invitations are kind of summarized in the program. I'll leave you to look at those and take those home with you. But I'd love to pray for us that we could welcome this connection that God so wants to gift us with. Let's pray for just a moment. God, I feel so grateful that you know me, that you know each of us, that you know our many needs, but that you know somewhere right at the base of those, one of the most deep and the most profound needs we have is to be known and connected, to know and offer connection to another. I'm grateful, God, that you want us to be and feel at home. At home in ourselves, at home in our communities, at home on this earth, at home with others, at home with you, a God that knows and loves us. My prayer, my desire, God, is that each of us would welcome this desire of yours for us. That each of us, if we need to, would take the sometimes small, sometimes brave steps of being open toward deeper connection. I pray, God, for sweet and good early returns. I pray, God, for your encouragement to a life of connection, moving forward toward more and more through all our years, all our days. Amen. Our band's up here. They gave me the signal. They're ready to go. I'm going to invite you to stand in a moment. And in addition to what you'll be led through here, though, for the rest of our service, if you would like someone to pray for you, we would love for that to happen. We have a prayer team that every Sunday on the back right offers the gift of that particular form of connection to have you prayed for and known before God in that way. I will pray for anything that you like, said or unsaid. Two things in particular on their hearts and prayers this morning. If there are people in the room with significant neck and shoulder tension or kind of a big tension headaches, they'd love to pray that you could experience God's peace and healing in your body over that. They also want to pray if anyone has had long-time issues or hopes that they've given up on but don't want to give up on, they'd love to pray that you could experience God not giving up on you in that way. So they'd love to pray for those things. Anything else in the back right? Why don't you stand if you're able?